The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, June 28th, the summer break edition. I'm Gabriel Roth. I'm an editor at Slate, and I'm the father of Eliza, who is 7, and Leo, who is almost 4.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, a journalist and podcaster in New Hampshire, and I am mom to Henry, who is 16, Teddy, who is 15, and my stepdaughter, Lily, who is 18.
And I'm Carville Wallace, a writer and podcaster in Oakland, California, and I'm the father to Georgia, who is 12, and Ezra, who is 15.
Today on our show, we are going to be talking about summer vacation. Plus, as always, we'll have questions from listeners. We'll make recommendations on Slate Plus. We will talk to a new dad who is already worrying about how to get his kids interested in sports without going overboard. But first up, let's talk about this summer. Rebecca, what are you guys doing for this summer?
We have one real vacation planned. We like to rent a house on Plum Island in Massachusetts, not the other Plum Island where the hoof mouth disease like research place that is featured in Silence of the Lambs. The other one, the nice one in Massachusetts.
A good one.
And so we spend a week there. This year it's going to be a little bit different because Henry is now driving. Teddy will be at his music camp that week. So Henry is now driving and has a lot more freedom to invite friends to kind of come and go and spend the week with us. So this year we rented a house that sort of has like an annex that we are thinking of as like the teen annex so that we can, you know, let them do their teen stuff. And we're going to see how it goes. It's an experiment in free teen parenting styles that we're trying this year with that. We're really looking forward to that, though. It's my favorite week of the summer. And of course, we're doing our annual trip, as we do every year, to the local water park up in the White Mountains. I think I talked about this last summer, where we rent a cabana and pretend we're on a tropical vacation when we're really just at the White Mountains water park. So that's all we've got in the books right now. Maybe that and some college tours.
And that will be both of your teens? Any other teens? Is that a two-teen household or multiple teens? How many teens are you going
for? I think it's going to end up being perhaps like a 20-teen household.
What?
Yeah. We don't know. I mean, Henry is inviting a bunch of friends from school. He's also inviting a bunch of Senate Page friends to come up. And he's got like a bunch of now Senate Page friends from the New England area. They could take the train in. They could come for summer, all of it. We're purposely leaving it like a little bit open. The place we rented last year, we thought we were going to have all three kids for the whole week. Turns out that's not the case because Teddy's not going to be with us. Lily's only going to be with us a couple of days. So we have all this space and we're kind of committed. So, you know, Henry's had a really rough work period of working and working really hard. So we're kind of seeing this as like an opportunity for him to chill out and see what he can do, what he can put together socially with his friends. So we'll see. We may end up like completely regretting it, like never doing it again. But I'm guessing that it'll probably work out okay.
I'm excited to hear about it.
It sounds good.
Carvel, how's your summer going?
So far, so good. We have we're doing this segment live from Washington, D.C. because we decided we're on a 2-week trip, the three of us, me, Ezra, and Georgia. We are doing the East Coast. We're doing Washington, D.C. Then we're seeing family in Pittsburgh. And then we're going up to Massachusetts to see friends. And that's kind of like the big summer vacation. The kids are also going to Florida with their grandparents later in the summer. Georgia did one sleepaway camp. Ezra was doing a film camp, which is like, I think, 2 weeks long. Or 1 week, 2 weeks long. And then Georgia's did one engineering camp, which we talked about earlier, which was a week long. And then she's doing a debate camp later in the summer, which is a week long. So It sounds like a lot, but it's actually sort of like planned activity, then like 2 weeks of nothing, and then planned activity, and then a week of nothing. So it kind of goes back and forth.
Yeah, we have all the, like, we're trying to fill up the days with the activity camps. Like, Eliza's doing tennis camp this week, and last week she was at the zoo camp and whatever. And even, like, as you say, it feels like a lot. And then you look at the calendar and it's still like, oh my goodness, there's like a full month of days where, like, I have no idea what she's going to.
Yeah. Well, it's really hard when they're that age.
It is hard when they're younger and they need constant supervision, and you can't just leave them to go hang out with their friends at the diner or the sock hop or whatever it is young people do now.
Sock hop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're experiencing that now. I mean, Teddy has the most plans of all of us. Teddy's doing his sleepaway camp later this summer. He's also doing the music camp. He's also doing like a trip with his dad. But right now, I have no idea what he's doing. He's just at home and I'm at work and I have no idea what's going on. And it's been this way all week. And, you know, my kind of fail always at the end of every school year is I always forget about that stupid last week in June when like, you know, because I always think of summer as like July and August. And there's always this random June week where a lot of other kids are away. So like a lot of his friends aren't around. So every morning this week, I'm just like leaving for work and I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll see you later. And then I come home and he's wearing, still wearing his pajamas. Like, I don't know what's been going on. But yeah, so it doesn't, you know, that kind of that sense of despair of like, I wish I had thought of something cool. It doesn't go away when they become older kids.
Good to know. All right. I have one question for you guys. How much over the course of the summer, when your kids are older than mine, and there's this long break from school, and we know that there's studies that show that like kids' academic or educational progress slips during the summer. How much work do you guys do? Or how much work should a parent do to keep the kid's brain active and working and learning versus how much is summer a time to leave the child's brain fallow so that new things may grow there come fall?
I mean, that's a great question. At this point, I lean a lot. Like if you had asked me when they were like 5 and 7, I would have been like, well, obviously we're going to weave academic activities throughout the, you know, like I would have really felt motivated around that because you don't want your kid to slip. Now that they're older, I'm like, I mean, I hear what they're saying. Like the whole point that the kids are making is that summer is a time in which you don't have to think about that, in which no one is trying to academically increase your brain. It's this feeling of management, right? That like adults, there's a lesson plan and a plan for everything. We're trying to teach you a thing. We're trying to show you the thing. And that gets tiresome for kids. And I think what happens over the summer is that they get a chance to be free from other people trying to teach them stuff. And in that way, they learn. Because kids want to learn. It's just that they need some time to learn what they want to learn, how they want to learn it, when they want to learn it at their own speed. So I think nowadays I feel more like summer is like just let it go. Like they'll find, you know, throw some stuff around. You might toss a book in the bedroom, see if the cover picture is interesting. If they pick it up, great. If not, they don't, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Try to fold some stuff into the trips. Like, you know, you do some trips and we see some things and then someone raises a question, a conversation comes up, you go on Wikipedia. Now you're actually talking about a point in history. Okay, that's fascinating. But I think you have. I think that you kind of have to like let them lead the way in the summer.
I think we're fighting, like institutionally, really fighting a system that's really designed to not support kids to learn anything over the summer. I mean, Henry is in Germany right now, finishing up his school exchange trip, and they're in school. Like they're going to be in school all summer. These high school kids in Germany, and he's been reporting back to me, and he's just like, "These kids are so much smarter than we are." And and it's the culture. They don't resent it. They get these 2 week breaks more frequently throughout the year. They get like, you know, a couple months of school, and then a 2 week break, and a couple months of school, and 2 week break. So for them, it's just the pattern of their schooling. And we don't have that. And I do think there is like, you know, it's tough when you realize like how privileged you have to be to during the summer have the time, wherewithal, and the ability to like sign your kid up for a library reading program and then bring them to it 3 times a week. Like that's something that like people here, like most people cannot do. They might not have access to a library. Their local library might not have the funding for a program. You have to like not be at work all day to be able to go to a program like that. And I don't know. On some level, I just feel like this isn't how we're built. So why are we trying to fight it? Let's just be lazy. Let them be lazy and like, like I guess I don't know. It's tough. I mean, you really do feel like it's an uphill battle when you're trying to do that kind of stuff over the summer.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Before we move on, let's do the business. If you have a question that you would like us to tackle, you can call and leave us a message at 424-255-7833 or send us an email at momanddad@slate.com. Check out our Facebook presence. Every episode has a really good discussion, and parents are sharing their own triumphs and fails, commiserating, asking for advice, talking about all kinds of parenting stuff as well as this show. Go to Facebook and search for Slate Parenting. It's a really fun community, and we moderate it a lot, so the discussions stay on track. In Slate Plus today, we're being joined by Sam Evans Brown. He's a colleague of Rebecca at New Hampshire Public Radio. He's the host of the podcast Outside In, and he's an avid sports guy who is now a brand new dad. He's excited to become a sports dad, but he doesn't want to be that kind of a sports dad. We will try to help him out with some advice. If you want to hear that segment and another segment every week, sign up for Slate Plus. You get full-length extra segments, no ads in any of our podcasts, and you help us make the show. Just $35 your first year. If you want to support us, go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today. All right, let's go. All right, we got now some special guests to provide some additional evidence here. Carvel's son Ezra and his daughter Georgia are here in the Washington, D.C. studio with him. Hi, guys.
Hello.
I want to ask you about your summer vacations. Do you think a summer vacation for a kid, especially a younger kid, should be rigorously scheduled and programmed by their parents, or do you think they should be largely left to their own devices?
God, no. I don't think that it should be rigorously scheduled. I mean, you said being left to our own devices. Like, nowadays, it's literally left to your own, like, devices, as in, like, technology screens. So,
true.
So kids will, they'll find a way to, and I know that, you may not think it's, like, healthy or whatever, but.
We don't.
I know that. But I feel like that if it's just kind of back-to-back scheduled so that it's, like, just a jam-packed summer where you're doing something all the time. It doesn't really give a lot of breathing room. And it kind of makes the kid feel trapped. But what do you feel, Georgia?
I think that there should be an even amount. I think that, like, kids should have something planned because it's, like, you get bored and then you start to miss school. But it's also, like, you should have time to be able to go outside or be on your phone and just be able to, like, realize, like, take it in that you're able to be away from school and able to be, like, in your own self and be free.
Well, like, what do you mean by free? Like, you mean, like, you don't have to, like unscheduled?
Like, there's nothing that you have to do. Like, your parents aren't pushing you to do, like, the dishes or go outside or, and, like, you don't have any schoolwork or anything that you, like, are planning in your mind to do or anything. You're just kind of able to be, like, in yourself and just be able to think and, like,
right,
not have to do anything.
What are some, like, summer activities that have worked for you? What are some stuff that your parents have set you up with that's turned out to be okay?
Sleepaway camp.
Sleepaway
camp.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was set up for me, and now I choose to go every summer.
Yeah.
What do you get out of it?
Just freedom. And, like, it's like you can go up and be without your parents with friends that you get to see every year. And, like, it's honestly helpful to, like, get you off of your phone and stuff because there's no, like, service or anything. So you can just be able to be, like fill up the time, but also not have anyone telling you what to do. The key thing is not having anyone to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Because, like...
You mean, like, not telling you to do boring stuff, like make your bed and, like, laundry and stuff like
not
that?
Not even. Like, say my parents will tell me to do my homework. I won't do it. Like, I won't want to do it. But if it's in my own, like, if I choose to do, like, if I'm like, oh, I should do my homework, then I will do it. Like,
that's
I have more resistance.
That is a phenomenon of being a kid is when... When someone tells you to do something, you'd want to do it so much less than if you thought about it yourself.
Yeah.
It's
even
this,
if it's something that you're going to do.
Literally, you have like a reaction inside of you where it's like, I don't want to do this now. Like, I've wanted to do something, like maybe want to do my homework. I'm like, oh, I should get this done. My mom comes in. She's like, hey, Ezra, have you done your homework yet? And like, something inside of me is just like, don't do it. You know, it's yeah. weird. It's weird, though. It's weird, though.
That's so interesting. So how, I mean, so how do we, like, how do we get you to do stuff that you should, we know you should do? Like, what?
Reverse psychology.
Yeah. How does it work?
Have you not done your homework yet?
Whatever you do, don't do your homework
or
the dishes.
There's something to, there is something to that. Because parents will sometimes, you know, when they feel, like, helpless, they'll just be like, I give up, I'm done. And they'll just, like, leave you somewhere. And, like, you'll legitimately be like, oh, I should do that. I should do what they told me to do.
Yeah, but you only get like one or two of those.
Yeah.
You can't pull it every day.
Yeah. No. That would be child neglect.
That would be child neglect, exactly.
Kids really need a reason. It's weird. Yeah. We really need a reason to do stuff and to – we like need to feel motivated in order. And if not, we just like resist. We put up a wall and it's just – you know, you tell us something goes in one ear and out the other.
So, like, because I said so, and do it or else.
Oh my God!
Is this not reason or motivation for you?
Yeah, sentences. No, it's really not. Those are sentences that every kid is just like, because I said so. I mean, you know, yeah.
Right.
It's like maybe it's like a psychology thing.
But here's a question I have about that: do you get bored, like when you? Like, we've talked – you, Ezra, you and I have talked about the, like, thing of boredom. It's like the first week you're like, this is awesome. I get to do whatever I want. And then you just sit in your room for, like, 12 hours straight watching Netflix. And then, I mean, what – talk about, like, that. How do you deal with boredom? How do you deal with, like, the – do you miss having stuff to do on some level?
I do. I think that I do miss, like, school. Like, once it gets to the middle of summer, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm ready to go back to school. But I think that – having like a planned thing to do every single day, like you have to go to school, you sit in the same seat, you like, it just feels like repetitive. It feels like you don't want to do that anymore. Once you get to summer, having nothing to do feels like I want something back to do. So it's like, it has to be even like of both. So there's time for you to just sit around and watch Netflix. And there's also time for you to like be with your like parents and your family and your friends and like go to Six Flags and run around and do fun stuff.
When you guys went to – when you were younger, we had to send you to day camp every day because you were kind of too young to stay home. Did that feel like too much, like when we sent you guys to Diamond or to Berkeley Day Camp or whatever?
100%. If any parents are listening, I just want to have like a state of the State of the Union address.
Okay.
Do not send your kids to day camp every single day. You know, I mean, if they're very young, I can understand why, you know, you do that because you have to work. But if you can, like, day camp is – it's the worst because it takes something that's really fun and free, like summer, and it adds, like, a structure to it. Like, they're adding a structure to fun, which is, like, defeats the point of, you know?
I feel like a lot of times adults want to give kids, like, things that repeat and things that happen again and again so that they have some kind of, like, thing that they know they're going to do. But it's also sometimes, like, you don't want all that all the time. Like, you want to maybe go to day camp one day and go swimming the next day. And, like, that's, you know, if you have to go to day camp every single day, it feels like, yes, you make friends. And, yes, like, you know, you're, like, you know the counselors or whatever. But it also feels like you want a break and you want to go home. And it just doesn't – it's not enjoyable and it takes summer and makes it unenjoyable.
Yeah, well, day camp isn't the same kind of community that sleepover camp is. Day camp is much more like a let's fill the day situation.
Yeah.
Like, I think that day camps run, they feel obligated to have, like, blocks. Everything is full. There's an activity and then another activity and another activity. And sleepaway camp, like, it's the community. Sometimes the activity is just sitting in your cabin and hanging out and telling stories. Or sometimes the activity is you get to choose. You go sailing or you go play kickball or whatever. And when you're talking about that freedom, the freedom is actually choosing, is that that's what you're talking about. And day camp just, they're not built that way.
Yeah, I remember actually the first time, I think it was Ezra, I think the first time you went to Feather River, you came back and like one of the things that you were so excited about was like making your own breakfast because they had like a little breakfast bar where you got to choose your own. You could make hot chocolate or you could make like oatmeal or whatever. And you were really, you must have been like 7, but you were really excited about the fact that you could just go wake up, walk over to the Chow Palace, the little mess hall area, make your own breakfast just as you saw fit. Something about that freedom really like spoke to you. And I think about that a lot because that kind of showed me like a lot of what you need to be happy is the feeling of being in charge of something. And I think that for both you guys, like when you talk about what you like about sleepaway camp, that's what it is. It's like the freedom without having adults like managing every move that you make. Is that right?
Really what it is like waking up, making your breakfast. Your dad will make you oatmeal every day and you'll like argue about it. You'll say, no, I don't want this. But when it ends up, you might choose the oatmeal, but you might not. So I feel like parenting is just kind of a bet. Like if my dad makes me oatmeal every morning, I'm going to complain about it. But once I get to camp, I might choose oatmeal as my breakfast when I have all these choices. But I also might choose, like, you know, candy. So it's like, it's just about, like, if you got it right or not. But it's like, we still, like, kids still understand that their parents work hard for them, even though we complain and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think that's time to move on to the next segment. Thank you so much, Georgia and Ezra, for coming by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, time to take a question from a listener. This one came to us over our Facebook group. If you're not in our Facebook group, you should join facebook.com and search for Slate Parenting. This question is being read for us by Slate editorial assistant Rachel Hampton.
Dear Mom and Dad are fighting. How do you make decisions about whether to allow your child to go to play at the home of a friend you do not know well? The child in question is 5. Do you stay with them? And if so, how do you approach that if you've not been invited? Are there questions you ask? Do you ever worry about relatives in the home that you don't know at all? The specific situation is that my daughter has had a friend from school come play here several times. The child's mother has always been comfortable leaving her here, sight unseen, and no questions asked. Now they are asking for my daughter to come there. I always ask about guns and pets in the home and would really rather stay for the first playdate to check it out, but I'll have to invite myself. Also, the mom's boyfriend lives there and is home during the day, and I don't know him at all, which makes me a little uncomfortable. There's a bit of instability there in terms of mom not holding a job and sometimes forgetting or skipping meals for the child. I know that's not the end of the world, but how do you make decisions about whether another home is different but perfectly safe for your child or not a good place for your young child to be? Thank you.
I feel like this mom made her decision in this case. So I'm not sure if I can help weigh it for her more. I mean, sometimes there are a couple of things at play here. One is that I can tell you with confidence that I was much more comfortable with my second child just driving up in front of a new friend's house, dropping him off and driving away. Like I gained confidence in that area over time. I remember when Henry was a baby and we would do these play dates, it was always like the adults sat around drinking coffee while the kids did whatever, or the adults, you know, found something to do together. And, you know, that did lead to some good friendships, but it also led to some like very awkward adult interactions while the kid had a blast. And I, as soon as it was kind of acceptable in my kids' friend group, started really encouraging, hey, just like drop your kid off, go to Target, go to the errands you have to do, whatever, it's fine. Because honestly, it was easier. I didn't have to like entertain an adult and also oversee 2 kids. But yeah, I mean, there's some comfort there. I do think it's a good question when your kid makes a friend at school or somewhere and, you know, and you've never met the kid before and you have no idea what's going on. I think it's fine to ask questions like, do you keep guns in the house? Or just, you know, find out that sort of basic information that's like within your safety and comfort level. I think it's also fine if there's a situation that strikes you as unsafe on its face or weird on its face. That's okay to make those choices. It's also a little bit of a slippery slope because I think one of the dangers that you kind of run into there is having your kid be friends with kids that are all look and live just exactly the way that you do, which is not good in other ways too. So maybe in those situations, you figure out a way to hang out. Maybe you say, you know what, my child is a little young to go on play dates by himself. Sometimes it doesn't go as, you know, exactly as we hope. So do you mind if I just hang out for like the first hour or so and make sure that everything's cool? I mean, I think it's okay to do that kind of thing. I hesitate to say always just cross the things that feel weird off the list because I really don't want to set up a situation where you're just crossing things off the list and that ends up like becoming a bias situation or sort of like encouraging a lack of diversity in your child's life. But I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a thing you have to feel, sort of feel your way through. But there is a good chance that in a year or 2 or 3, you might, like me, become the kind of mom who just drives up to a strange house, drops their kid off, and drives away because you have gained confidence as a parent and you kind of know your kid's community and the kinds of kids that they are attracted to and the kinds of kids that they like playing with.
So I think if your kid is five, I mean, the question here is like, should you hang out at the house at least for the first play date? I think, yes, absolutely hang out at the house for the first play date. Five is certainly an age where that's not even remotely parental overreach. The one question I have about this letter, though, is that it does seem like – there's the issue of the boyfriend, which, okay, that's something you want to at least investigate or check out or meet the person. And then there's also the question of what you said about instability, not having a job, missing a meal or two. Those are things that strike me kind of like along Rebecca's lines as like – when you phrase them that way in a letter, they sound super dramatic, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a problem. Like, someone not being employed doesn't mean that there's anything like morally wrong with the household. I hope that's not the implication in the letter. And also, like, missing or skipping a meal, it's like there's a lot of ways that that could be said. Maybe just eating is a lot more casual, like, around the house than it is maybe in your house. They don't sit down and have like every single meal isn't like an official event where everyone in the family sits down at the table at the precise same time and eats. There are people who might interpret that as like, oh, I feel like we're missing and skipping meals. I don't know. I'm not saying it isn't anything. I'm saying that that's also possible that a person could have a perfectly healthy, happy, well-fed household and another person can walk away with the impression that meals are skipped or that eating is unstable. So that's something I would be careful about. I would wonder if it's – I mean, I just would be careful if I were listening to this letter, something in my like instinct tells me to be careful about making judgments based – making class and value judgments that aren't necessarily aligned with what's really happening. And I think that that's what Rebecca was getting at. And I think that that's the possibility is there. I don't have anywhere near enough information to say that is or what isn't happening. I'm just saying that something in that letter made me aware of that. So I think go over to the, because your kid's five, you go to the play date, obviously the first time around. I think that, after it's over, you ask your kid questions about what they experienced and what happened. If the kid seems healthy, happy, nothing was creepy, scary, unfortunate, or weird to them, then I think the next time you give it a shot and let the kid go alone and then you ask them questions afterwards. That would be the approach I would take, because there's not a whole lot in this letter that suggests that there's anything sketchy or wrong about this family necessarily.
Yeah, I agree that it's, you know, it's important not to, you know, prejudge, and it's important not to just be wary of things that are different. And the letter writer does say explicitly, like, how do I tell whether this is just different but perfectly safe environment or if it's not a good place for my kid to be. So I think the writer of this letter is aware of the danger of being, you know, making misjudgments based on incomplete information. And I think the way around that is by spending time there yourself. I think it's perfectly natural and perfectly appropriate to say, hey, here we are. Can I come in? If you feel like you need to give a reason why you're coming into their house when they didn't come into your house, an easy thing you can say is like, oh, my kid can be a little shy in new places sometimes. And just like say that quietly to the other parent while you're walking into your house, because it's completely natural. If you invite a 5-year-old over, it's completely natural for an adult to accompany that person, especially on the first time. And then just hang out for a while and like try not to be in the way and try not to inconvenience the people, but also have a friendly chat with them and not in a like, here I am interrogating you as to whether this is an acceptable play space for my child, but in a like, well, here we are, two parents getting to know one another in a kid's play date kind of a way. And probably you will come away feeling like, well, that was either interesting or boring, but it certainly didn't seem dangerous. But maybe you'll get some kind of weird vibe that makes you feel like this doesn't seem like a great place to have a play date. And either way, then you're making that decision based on actual information and not just on whatever kind of weird signals you can pick up from outside the house.
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, I do, you're right, Carvel, that it is kind of what I was getting to, because you know, I remember being a kid myself and having a friend from school that came over for a couple play dates, and I really wanted to go to her house. And my mom was like really hesitant and weird about it because she thought that my friend's clothes like weren't clean and like she seemed troubled. And I remember her using these very loaded words. I mean, even as a kid, like in fourth grade, I remember thinking like, I'm not cool with that word being used to describe my friend. And she said, it seems like she has problems. She seems troubled. But you know what? Like, how are kids who might be even might be living on the margins? Let's say like she did have a lot of problem. Let's say her family was poor. Let's say they were neglecting her and not washing her clothes. Let's say it wasn't just her choice and she wasn't just putting on dirty clothes from her bedroom floor every day and her parents weren't noticing or whatever. Like, why shouldn't your child be friends and play with a kid who has a different background than you, or a kid who perhaps family is struggling economically? Like, that it's sort of talking about, you know, making your child's community for them. You're helping them build their community when you help them form these relationships. And I think if you can be proactive about encouraging diverse friends, a diverse set of friends, whatever that means in your community, and if your child is attracted and is compatible with a child that may have different circumstances than your kid is, you know, perhaps lucky enough to have, like, those are relationships that should be encouraged. You know, I'm not saying if you feel that, you know, in that household there's danger, you should just drop your kid off and drive away. If you feel that way, hang out when they're there. That's fine. But don't, there is something to like the balance of kids making friends, that those playdate experiences, going to each other's houses, sharing the way you live with your friends, it's really important in the friendship making process. And those are the friendships that last, you know, the ones where you have been to each other's houses, get to know each other's parents, have dinner over, have sleepovers. Like, those are the real friendships that you have a great opportunity to form when you're little. And, you know, I say open the tent as much as you can and definitely try to keep those like trigger value judgments at bay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks so much for the letter. Hope that response was helpful. If you have a question that you would like us to tackle, you can call us at 424-255-7833 or send us an email at momanddad@slate.com. Time now for the part of the show that we call recommendations. That's where we recommend things to you. We call it recommendations. Carvel, what kind of recommendation are you going to recommend this week?
Hold on. My kid is making me open their bottle of water because they can't get it open.
I recommend teaching your kid to open their
classic,
own damn bottle of water.
Classic parenting podcast moment.
In his defense, the bottles are like tilted weird, and so they're hard to open. Okay.
Special pleading on behalf of your own child, I think.
I'm recommending a book, Big Cat, Little Cat, which is a book. This is going back to the old days. This is a book for kids age 3 and up. It's basically a picture book that describes the friendship between a big cat and a little cat. And I came across it probably a couple months ago. I was at a friend's house that had a little kid, and I was looking at it, and I was like, oh, I'm going to write this down on my list of recommendations. And it's just a cute book. It's well drawn, and I feel like I just, you know, a lot of times we give recommendations for older kids because my kids are into stuff that's like 15, 16, 17 and up. And so I like to throw it back to the old school every now and again. So I'm recommending the book Big Cat, Little Cat by Elisha Cooper, awesome. 2017.
I'm going to recommend the practice of writing letters in your family. This has come up for us over the past couple weeks because it's summer and Leo is with a babysitter much of the day, and he's a little more likely to get sort of lonely. He was fine at school in a whole class of people, but now he's sometimes like, where's dad? Where's mom? Where's this Eliza? And he and his babysitter have been like, they'll write letters to us. That's the thing that he does when he wants to talk to us. And so he dictates to her and she sort of helps him write this letter. And the letters are so great. I came home from work last night and I got home late. So he wrote me a letter because I wasn't going to be home for dinner. And he wrote me a letter that began, "Dear Daddy, how is work? Did you have any good meetings?" I thought that was so nice.
Aww,
that someone's concerned
cute.
About whether I had any good meetings. Thank you. No one else has asked that. And so I now sometimes write letters to him, and I will sometimes I'll text him if I want him to see it now. But other times, I'll come home and leave a letter for him, and then he can read it the next day while I'm at work. And then we've all been writing letters to each other, and it's been a cool family thing this summer. That's my recommendation: is letters.
I love that. That's cute.
Rebecca, how about you?
I'm going to recommend the documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor about Fred Rogers. If this is showing at a theater in your town, run fast. Do not walk to go see this movie. It is a magical exploration of Fred Rogers' philosophy in building what is described in the movie as potentially the worst TV show ever made, which turns out to be the greatest children's television show ever made. There are a couple of threads in the film that really I cannot stop thinking about. You think about the intentions that Fred Rogers had when he talked to children, the science that he used to back up his philosophy around interacting with kids, and you even think about the songs on the show. And I just want to point out that the movie comes back to this theme again and again. The song It's You I Like from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is not I Love You Just the Way You Are, which to me has always implied, I don't really, but I'm saying I do because that's what you need to hear. It's You I Like, the lyrics are, it's not the clothes you wear. It's not the other stuff about you. It's you that I like. Yeah. And as Fred Rogers points out again and again and again, because he is a looming presence in this documentary, that is the message we should be giving our kids. It is you that I like. I love you. I will protect you. And we will build a community around you.
But it's you I like, the way you are right now. The way down deep inside you, not the things that I do, not your fancy chair, that's just beside you.
And this film, Kevin and I had to sit in the theater until everyone else left because we were crying at the end, but it was the good kind of crying that you get when like something amazing has just happened. So I'll just say it's not just like child of the 70s and 80s nostalgia. It is an important movie that I think anybody who has kids or would ever think about having kids or has ever been a kid should run to see. So that is Won't You Be My Neighbor? It's a documentary about Fred Rogers.
That's so great. As you, Rebecca and I, you and I have talked about this as the two like Mr. Rogers fans. I mean, the older I get, the more I am obsessed. But when I was a kid, I was really interested because I grew up in Pittsburgh, as you know, which is where Mr. Rogers was based. And in fact, when the kids and I go to Pittsburgh, we're going to see the Mr. Rogers documentary in the theater in Pittsburgh as a way of having the immersive Fred Rogers experience.
Nice.
Ah, so wonderful. It's a very quiet movie. It's a very quiet little movie, but it's really, really beautiful.
Yeah. The kids are going to be into it, even though they're already looking at me like, this bullshit, this is what you're taking us to see. But I already know.
Well, we'll be in the next theater watching Star Wars. All right. That's it for our show this week. If you have a question for us, you can call us at 424-255-7833 or email us at momanddad@slate.com. You can let us know what you thought of this episode at our lively and active Facebook group. Go to Facebook and search for Slate Parenting. Our show is produced by Benjamin Frisch. For Carvel Wallace and Rebecca Lavoie, I'm Gabriel Roth, and we will see you next week.